With the death of Queen Elizabeth II and the accession of King Charles III, Catholics are once again asking, is there any value to a monarchy that is built upon anti-Catholic foundations? That's going to be a topic today at Crisis Point. Hello, I'm Eric Simmons, your host and editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Before I get started, I just want to encourage people to smash that like button and to subscribe to the channel, but don't hit notify because you have a life. Also, just encourage people to follow Crisis Magazine at Crisis Mag at all the various social media outlets. Okay, so obviously the big world news of the past week and a half has been the death of Queen Elizabeth II. She was, her state funeral was yesterday. Today is the 20th, I think. And so yesterday was the 19th, was her state funeral. All the everybody who's anybody in the world was there, including President Biden, all the royalty from European royal families and Middle Eastern royal families. And so it's been the topic of discussion. I wrote an article recently at Crisis Magazine about the both Catholicism and anti-Catholicism of the British monarchy, which I'll talk about a little bit here today. But I just want to talk in general about what we can learn from what we've seen with the death of Queen Elizabeth, thinking about the British monarchy, but also thinking about all the different ceremonials, everything that we've seen over the past week and a half or so. What can we as Catholics learn from this? Because I do think there's a lot that we can learn from what we've seen and what's happened. Now, I will admit that the reaction to all this is going to be different for somebody who lives in the United Kingdom, a Catholic who lives in the United Kingdom, or maybe one of the Commonwealth countries, and versus somebody like me who is an American Catholic. Obviously, she's not, you know, Queen Elizabeth was not my head of state. She's not my monarch. And so as an American, it's going to ring differently for me than it is for somebody who's in the United Kingdom. That being said, though, I think there's some universal things that we really can learn from what we've seen over the past couple of weeks. First is, I just think we should recognize the majesty and the beauty of the public ceremonies that have surrounded her death, all the way from the moment they announced it to the proclamation of Prince Charles as King Charles III, then like 2 days later, I think it was. Then taking her to lie in state, the procession to get there, the lying in state itself, and then the funeral. These were rich and emotionally stirring ceremonies that we saw on display. And I made a comment about them, and the whole world has been watching them and has been touched by them. I made a tweet the other day where I talk about this, I say, imagine if the ceremonies surrounding the Queen's death were held in a typical evangelical Protestant or Novus Ordo Catholic fashion. Does anyone think they would be as powerful and able to evoke the meaning and emotions of the event? Tradition unites people across time and space. And most people liked it. They understood what I was trying to say, but I did get some pushback. You, of course, get the defensive Catholics who attend the Novus Ordo who cannot handle any criticism of Novus Ordo. Notice I said the typical Novus Ordo Catholic fashion, because somebody said, well, the Pope John Paul II's funeral was in the Novus Ordo, and that was very touching. And yes, they're right. I didn't say that, though. I said the typical, which is, i.e., if you go to your typical Novus Ordo parish funeral, what are you going to see? You're going to see something that does not really evoke the solemnity of the event. It doesn't evoke the emotions. It doesn't really tie you into what this person's life means in the context of the tradition of the Catholic Church. So when a Catholic dies, that needs to be put into context. That goes beyond this person's life, but this person was part of the life of the church, which has lasted for 2,000 years. And so even things like, for example, wearing black at your typical Novus Ordo parish, when they have a funeral, the priests do not wear black vestments. You saw at the Queen's funeral, the Anglican bishops did wear black vestments. Just little things like that. I'm not saying, and of course, a Novus Ordo mass is infinitely more valuable, better, whatever the word you want, superior to any Anglican service, because it has the Eucharist, it has Jesus. But we're talking about here is we're talking about a lot of these little parts of the liturgy that help tie us into sacred tradition. Somebody said, you're just equating tradition with ascetics. No, I'm saying ascetics are part of our tradition, and they do matter. And so these traditional ceremonies, like, for example, for the queen, is where we see it most of all, is they tie in the entire country, in this case, the entire world, into the tradition that she was part of, which is the British monarchy. And so our Catholic traditions should do the same thing. They should tie us into the great tradition of the Catholic Church. And so there's an excellent article the other day, I'm going to pull it up here, from Joseph Shaw over our sister publication, 1 Peter 5. He touted why British and Commonwealth Catholics venerate their Protestant monarch. Because this is a question a lot of Catholics are asking, especially traditional Catholics, like, why would a Catholic venerate a Protestant monarch? And so this article by Joseph Shaw, who is from, he lives in the United Kingdom, I believe he lives somewhere in England. He wrote this. And there's a part particularly I want to highlight. And that's the part, the section called Human Traditions. He talks about, I start with human, that is non-divine traditions, because the anti-traditional attitude is so powerful in secular culture that even some Catholics who accept the importance of divine tradition with a capital T as a source of revelation in Catholic theology can be dismissive of any other kind of tradition. He goes on, he says, I would define traditions as those practices which have been performed by our predecessors, ancestors, predecessors in the faith, previous incumbents in the roles we fill, which A, have been continued over time by successive generations, not necessarily without breaks, and B, have been regarded as significant and are therefore C, regarded as binding to some degree on the present generation. Thus, it is likely that we feel that we ought, in some sense, continue various inherited cultural practices, such as Thanksgiving dinners, Christmas trees, attending Shakespeare plays, and so on. There may be reasons why it is impossible on a particular occasion. It may be that we are not ourselves inducted into the tradition in our own families. But if we see ourselves as members of a cultural group that is historically characterized by some practice, we can adopt or revive it. Here's the key point. These things have value because things characteristic of a cultural group are markers of identity. They give members of the group shared experiences and a sense of belonging, both synchronically and with other living group members of the group, and diachronically with previous generations. Discussions about the origins of practices are usually beside the point. If members of a group identify them as things that they ought to perform because they are members of the group, they will function as markers of identity. A cultural group must, by definition, have traditions to distinguish it from other groups. I think Joseph hits the ball out of the park on this one. He's absolutely right. These things have value because things are characteristic of a cultural group are markers of identity. And this is really the big tragedy that we're seeing with our current Pope, Pope Francis, attacking traditionalism as backwardism. We can't look backwards. We have to look forwards. That's false. That's not true. As Catholics, we instinctively need to look backwards. First of all, the pillars of our faith are scripture, tradition, magisterium. If you undercut tradition, then the whole thing falls apart. And so in a sense, by the Pope attacking tradition as backwardism, he's attacking a foundation of his own religion that he leads. And so the idea is that we need to respect tradition, capital T tradition we need to follow, but we need to respect small t traditions that make up that tradition, that capital T tradition. And we see that in, for example, the funeral of Queen Elizabeth, all these small t traditions, the way they do things, the way they took off the crown, they took off the orb, the scepter, and put it on the high altar, the way they had the procession, all the different things about it. And there it's hearkening back to the state tradition, the nation's tradition, which is a good thing. As Catholics, we're patriotic. We love our nation. But for Catholics, those small T traditions that we find in the liturgy in particular, but in other things as well, they connect us to the capital T tradition. They give us identity. So things like processions, Corpus Christi processions, Ember Days, which we're celebrating this week, things like that, which have been lost, largely lost in the Catholic Church over the past 60 years. Each one of them individually isn't necessarily that important. But as a whole, they're incredibly important. So for example, if at the Queen's funeral, they had left out one of the traditions that had been done at her father's funeral, for example, it probably wouldn't have been the biggest deal in the world. Some people might not like it. I probably wouldn't have liked it because I want things to be exactly like they were. But I get, like, if one or two things, little things change, fine. But if you basically do a whole scale change of the entire funeral and, like, upcoming the coronation, this is actually a big danger. Will King Charles III change the coronation, his coronation? Because he has a certain ability to make changes to it. How much will he change it from his mother's coronation, from his grandfather's coronation, and going back further and further? How much will he change it? Because ultimately, if he does a whole-scale change of the coronation ceremony, it'll be a disaster. Because it will not tie in with the tradition of the nation. It will not tie into the cultural identity of the nation. Likewise, if you make a whole-scale change, hypothetically, if you make a whole-scale change to the liturgy, what that does is it undercuts your connection, your cultural identity to the living tradition of the church, the capital T tradition of the church. And we see that, like I said, so much in today's church that we've lost so many of the tradition. You know, beside the arguments about the Mass itself, I'm talking about all those things that surround the life of a Catholic, the acts of popular devotion, popular piety, like I said, processions, the Ember Days, things, Rogation Days, things celebrating the Ascension on the actual Feast of the Ascension that Thursday, things like that have all been lost in so much of the church today. And what it does is it disconnects us then from capital T tradition. And as Joseph Shaw said, it's things that, let me find this, the important part he said, it connects us synchronically with other members of the group, other Catholics, in other words. It connects us. When you do a procession with somebody, you remember it. You both remember it. You're connected to that person. You become a little bit more connected to that other people in the procession. Also, diachronically, i.e. with previous generations. When I am a participant in a Corpus Christi tradition, I know I'm connected to Catholics throughout time and space who have done the same thing. And that's important. That's why these traditions we see with the British monarchy, I'll bring that up again, the British monarchy, what we see surrounding the Queen's death, are important for the life of that nation, the health of that nation.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Playlist shuffled? Check. Drinks on ice? Check. Z-Biotics? Make the most of your time with friends by starting your evening with Z-Biotics, the only pre-alcohol probiotic designed to make those rough mornings after drinking alcohol a thing of the past. Z-Biotics is key for those who live for the moment. Visit ZBiotics.com to learn more.
So too, the traditions of the small T tradition of the Catholic Church are important to the health of the church. So the idea that somehow tradition is backwardism, as the Pope called it, and something to be avoided, and we only just look to the future. No, that's absolutely not a Catholic way of looking at our faith. We build upon what comes before us. We don't forget it, and we continue to do these things. Yes, I agree with the quote that the Pope loves to say, which is from Jaroslav Pelikan. He never says who it is, but because he was a Lutheran and became Orthodox. He says that tradition is the living faith of the dead, and traditionalism is the dead faith of the living. Yes, I think there's truth in that. We don't simply repeat what previous generations did unthinkingly and without any changes ever. There can be organic development in these things. In fact, something like a Corpus Christi procession didn't exist in the first century. It developed later as we got a deeper understanding of what the Eucharist was. And so therefore, it's not saying that we just copy exactly everything that's done before. However, it does mean that we don't jettison it either. We don't easily jettison it. We might make little tweaks to it. We might add to it. We might sometimes say, okay, this part we don't really do anymore. But we don't do a whole-scale jettisoning of it. And so I hope and pray that King Charles won't do that with his coronation. But more importantly, far more importantly, I lament the fact that the church has basically done that with our traditions. And so that's a real argument for why we keep our traditions, the small T traditions, because they keep us as part of this living tradition. And so that also is the value we see of a monarchy, even a figurehead, mostly figurehead monarchy, like the British monarchy, is it unites the people. The people of the United Kingdom are probably more united now than they have been in a very long time, because they're united around this one figure. And they're united around the traditions. Let me tell you, if they threw together some slapdash funeral for the queen that didn't have it include any of the traditional elements of a monarch's funeral, I guarantee they would have been united in anger. The people would be united in anger, but they would not have been united like they are because of these traditions. They help bring us together. Now, that all being said, I do want to talk about a little bit about the British monarchy today, because I know that there is this innate suspicion, particularly among American traditional Catholics, with the British monarchy. And I get that. Because the fact is that the British monarchy is founded upon the English monarchy. I know, let's not get too pedantic. The British monarchy, of course, didn't exist until Britain existed. There was the English monarchy that came before. But it's a succession of one monarchy, all the way back to the King of Wessex, Alfred the Great, back in the 9th century. And so that monarchy in the 16th century, the Catholic elements of it fell. King Henry VIII broke away from Rome. He basically made himself supreme governor of the church. And the current occupant of the British monarchy, right now King Charles III, is a supreme governor of the Church of England, which is the mother church of the Anglican communion. So he's the head of a heretical church. I mean, and that's not something to be taken lightly. But I want to talk a little bit about the detail, specifically, how should we look at this as a Catholic? To me, when I look at Queen Elizabeth II, I see somebody who exemplified a lot of very important, and somebody mentioned, and the Scottish monarchy. Oh, thanks, Connor. Somebody mentioned in the comments the Scottish monarchy. Yes, the Scottish monarchy as well. Of course, you could also say the Wales, because Wales way back. But yes, so it brings them all together. But Queen Elizabeth, to me, Queen Elizabeth II, not the first, Queen Elizabeth II exemplified to me a lot of the human virtues that are lacking in today's world. Human virtues are not to be discounted lightly. Human virtues are very important. That's what grace builds upon. Grace builds upon nature. The human virtues are important. So, for example, sacrifice and sticking with duty are important. They're important things. They're particularly important today. Joseph Shaw wrote another article. I think it was for the European Conservative. I'm not sure who. It was for about the importance of the sacred office, a sacral office. And he was talking about how we have certain duties in our life, but our modern world has told us that these things restrict us. They enslave us. Our duties enslave us. But what Queen Elizabeth II showed is that actually by fulfilling your duties, you are made free. She was one of the most free people in the world, even though she had all these responsibilities, all these duties, because she embraced them. And in fact, you see the royals who don't embrace their duty are the most enslaved. I don't think there's any better example than Prince Harry and his wife, Meghan Markle. They clearly are enslaved to the woke culture. They are not free people because they're resisting. I mean, in Prince Harry's case, he's born into these duties. In Meghan Markle's case, she married into them. So the fact is that they are part of, these are duties that define who they are, but they're resisting them. They're fighting against them. And because of that, they're enslaved. They become enslaved to the woke culture. If they would embrace them, they would become free. The same is true of all of us. That if you try to escape, for example, your duties of parenthood, I'm a husband and father. That is my ultimate vocation that I have to fulfill. If I resist those, if I fight against those, I'm going to be miserable. And I'm going to be enslaved to my passions. I'm going to be enslaved to whatever it is I want, which is exactly what you see with Harry and Meghan. They're enslaved to their own passions. But instead, if I embrace my duty as a father, as a husband, then I'm free. And so Queen Elizabeth II did give us a good example of that, of being that. Now, I got people who were, you know, writing me and talking about how, I mean, I got people sending me, when I said, I wrote an article about this, about Queen Elizabeth saying nice things about her. And people are like, oh, you don't know the secret history. You don't know really what's going on. And I mean, they make all these accusations, all these terrible things they say about her. And I get that the British monarchy is not immaculate and it has definite issues that we need to consider. But that being said, so we see that. But what about King Charles III? Now, King Charles III, some people would say, you know, he's a globalist. He's part of the Great Reset crowd. And they're probably right. He is a product of his upbringing. And frankly, his upbringing is globalist and elitist. And so it doesn't surprise me at all that he has some relationships with the elitists in the Great Reset crowd. They're going to reach out to him, obviously, as the heir to the throne. They would have reached out to him long ago. And I think some of his own ways of looking at things, particularly his views on environmentalism, probably tend towards being compatible with a lot of the Great Reset crowd. That being said, Charles is a mixed bag. I do not believe he is some pure evil figure. I mean, I would put somebody like Bill Gates or Anthony Fauci. Those people are far worse than somebody like King Charles, because they have made it their life mission to basically destroy life on this earth. I mean, they are, I mean, I don't think anybody is actually complete evil other than the devil, but they are very much dangerous folk that I think we should resist. I don't think King Charles is on that level. I think he's got some definite issues. And like I said, he also has some things he said in the past that are very, positive from a Catholic perspective. I mean, he has a respect for tradition. Being part of the monarchy, I would think he would have to have a certain respect for tradition. And so you see that in some certain aspects of his beliefs. But most importantly, I think King Charles has gotten to the point now, he's 73 years old, where he understands his role as king. I think if he had become king in his 20s, that could have been a disaster. But I think he realizes now his role as a constitutional monarch of the United Kingdom is that he needs to basically keep his mouth shut about a lot of his causes. He said that in his first address to the world after he had become king. He basically said, I can't be involved in all these charities I'm involved with, all my causes, because he's the king now. And so I suspect he will try to follow his mother's lead and keep out of these things. So I don't think it's necessarily that big a deal that in the past he seemed to be to hobnob with the Great Reset crowd. Probably it'd be more accurate to say that Great Reset crowd hobnob with him, and his views on environmentalism, things like that, which are troubling, probably don't matter anymore. I think Queen Elizabeth, her personal views probably were solid in a lot of ways, but she probably had some that weren't that great either. But in the end, you didn't know them because she doesn't have the authority to do much about it. And I think King Charles recognizes that. And also with the whole idea of the royal family, I mean, Prince Andrew, I mean, let's be honest, he's almost definitely a pedophile. And that's awful. I kind of, every time I saw him in any of the ceremonies surrounding the Queen's death, I cringed, because I mean, he's worse than cringeworthy. And Prince Harry, obviously, and Meghan have already talked about, they're not very good examples either. But ultimately, when I look at the royal family, I look at it like, you know what? It's a modern family. It's just a modern family. Modern families are made up of some pretty messed up people. And I think we just have to recognize that. It's a sad indictment of our times, but it's not that surprising that somebody, you know, somebody's uncle is done some terrible things, maybe in jail or should be in jail. Somebody's cousin is like super into the woke thing and doing terrible things like that. Other guys are deadbeats. I mean, that's modern families today. And so the fact that the royal family is like that, just they reflect the culture that they live in. So I think ultimately what we have to do is we have to, as Catholics personally, I think we need to respect monarchies. even non-Catholic monarchies like the British monarchy. I think we need to respect the value that they give to a nation, that they really do help unify a people. But more importantly, as Catholics, I think we should recognize and see that value and apply it in the church. We used to do this great. I mean, after all, the Catholic Church is a monarchy with Jesus Christ as our invisible head and the Pope as the visible head. We need to remember that. I mean, you know, I think it was Paul VI who dumped. No, it wasn't Paul VI. I'm sorry. I think it was John Paul I or II who dumped a lot of the ancient ceremonies surrounding the Pope. But not just around the Pope, around the liturgy, around popular piety. I mean, Sacrosanctum Concilium in Vatican II, it kind of suggested that a lot of these devotions that we have take away from our worship of Jesus Christ, our devotion to Jesus Christ. But the reality is we've seen that's completely the opposite is true. I mean, think about the argument saying all these ceremonies surrounding the Queen's death somehow take away from your devotion to the Queen. That makes no sense, does it? It makes absolutely no sense. Likewise, all the ceremonials surrounding the liturgy, surrounding popular devotions, surrounding all the different things that make up the public life of the church, how do they take away from devotion to Jesus Christ? They don't. And that's just something that was kind of made up in the 20th century that had no basis in reality. And so I think we really should, instead of trying to be more like the modern world, we should recognize that with the popularity of what's happening here surrounding the Queen's death, we should recognize in the Catholic Church, yeah, maybe we should embrace some more of our old traditions, do more processions, do more things like celebrate the Ember Days and things of that nature. And yes, make the traditional Latin Mass more available to people rather than less available to them. Now, regarding the British royal family in particular, I just want to leave with this. I think as Catholics, our attitude to them should be they are the rightful monarchs of the United Kingdom. The Vatican has recognized that since the 18th century, I think it was. I think it was in around the 1700s, sometime in the middle of 1700 or so, that the Vatican said, yeah, this is the legitimate monarchy of the United Kingdom. I think we just need to recognize that, understand that, recognize that they are legitimate rulers. At the same time, we need to pray for their conversion. And I suggested this in an article, and I think maybe even on Twitter, I'm not sure. One thing we can do as Catholics is adopt an Anglican parish and spiritually adopt it, to pray for it every day, to convert as a parish to the ordinariate, to the Catholic ordinariate, become an ordinary parish. That's how ordinariate parishes, I've talked about the ordinariate before in the podcast and in articles, that's how an ordinariate parish comes into being typically is through the conversion of an Anglican Episcopal priest and often some of their congregation as well. So let's pray for that to happen. Find one in your area. Maybe find one, maybe adopt one that's in England. Wherever the case may be, find one, adopt it as a parish that you will pray for every day. Say a prayer for every day, maybe Hail Mary, something like that. Maybe pray to the patron of that. Most Anglican Episcopal churches actually have saints as patrons. Pray to that saint that they would be converted. And obviously not if it's a post-schism saint, but if it's a saint from before that, a Catholic saint, pray for their conversion, that the priest, the priest's family, and the whole congregation becomes Catholic and becomes an ordinary parish. Because the fact is, the Anglican Church, and most Episcopal churches, is dying. I would rather it be converted into Catholic churches rather than just cease to exist. But as it happens, if more and more of the Anglican Church, more and more of the Anglican Communion becomes Catholic, that's a signal to the Supreme Governor of the Church of England that maybe there is something in this Catholicism. Maybe I should consider Catholicism. Maybe the royal family didn't consider Catholicism. And the rules about the heir to the throne, the king not being able to be Catholic would get thrown away. And to see a conversion of the royal family to Catholicism. But I think we start with what we can. I can't talk to the king. You can't talk to the king probably. But you can pray for individual Anglican communion parishes, Episcopal parishes, for them to convert and become ordinariate parishes. Okay, I'll leave with that because that's a great thing to leave it on, is the idea that we need to pray. We need to pray specifically for everybody who's not Catholic. But I would just say also pray for, like I said, spiritually adopt an Anglican Episcopal parish to convert and to become an ordinariate parish. Okay, well, that's it for now. Until next time, everybody, God love you.